ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It must surely be the greatest run chase in the history of women's one-day internationals, given the context of a Women's Cricket World Cup semi-final. Victory by 5 wickets to tears of joy and passion.
Incredible scenes in the semi-final of the Women's World Cup between Australia and India overnight, unless you're an Australian fan. India chased down a record total of 338 to knock the Aussies out of the tournament. And with that, could we be starting to see the changing of the guard with this team? Plus a huge final round of AFLW that will see a lot of movement in the top eight. And speaking of movement, the Wallabies have made 8 changes for the start of the spring tour as they take on England at Twickenham. I'm Poppy Penny and this is ABC Sport Daily. Michelle Gosco has represented the Australian women's cricket team at all levels of the game, including at an ODI World Cup in India, where she was part of a winning team. Gossie, Australia batted first last night and set a seriously good total, 338. How did they get from setting a record target to India chasing them down for a historic win?
Oh, I can't believe it. I'm still in a bit of shock, actually, today and trying to process it because, you know, you go to bed and you're thinking, okay, the Aussies have got a really good total on the board. And then next minute, they're lost. And, you know, it was a world record run chase by India to mow down the Aussies. But credit where credit's due, India batted superbly and took advantage of the chances that the Australians gave them.
Goes up. Huge moment. Keeper, bowler, Healy puts it down. Extraordinary, beyond belief.
So well done to them, but yeah, devastating as an Australian fan.
Yeah, there were sort of dropped catches, and even Elisa Healy said post-match she thought that there were more runs out there for them, which is hard to believe because the total they set was super impressive. But I think some of those mistakes in the field are where this game, sort of pardon the pun, was dropped. And aside from young gun Phoebe Litchfield, the key contributors with the bat were Elise Perry and Alyssa Healy. They're both in their mid-30s, and I am certainly not writing them off because that would be plain silly. But do you feel like this was their last chance at winning an ODI World Cup?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't put it past maybe Elise Perry. I think Alyssa Healy, you know, with all the injuries that she's had in the last couple of years, I think that may be her last one. We know Megan Schutz retired from ODIs after this. So, yeah, it does feel like that, a little bit of changing of the guard for the Australian side. So there's a big gap between the youngsters in the side and the more experienced ones. So, yeah, it might be a little bit of change for the Australian women's cricket team.
Are they ready for the guard to change, do you think?
I think we're lucky we've got Beth Mooney in there. We've got Georgia Vole, who's obviously been around the group as well. You know, a couple of the youngsters still coming around in the WBBL. I've just commentated the T20 Spring Challenge in Sydney, and there are some really good youngsters coming through, but it is very difficult because they've had to bide their time for so long because we've been so reliant on the superstars in the Australian team. So there might be a little bit of a transition, and it'll be interesting to see sort of how that comes about. We've got a few of the players that are sort of getting towards the end of their career, but it's all at the same time. So how they manage that will be interesting to see.
One of those sort of next gen coming through, and I feel like we've been talking about her for years because we have, is Phoebe Litchfield. Coming into this match, her last 2 scores were 5 and 1. She took that personally and knocked 119 off 93 balls, including an insane reverse sweep for 6.
And she switch hits it for 6. Wow. Phoebe Litchfield.
How impressed were you with her performance last night? And does it give you a little bit of hope that the changing of the guard might not be so brutal?
She's a superstar, isn't she? Mm. And that's where the hockey comes in as well. I mean, I only learnt this not long ago, that you play with a right-handed hockey stick the whole time. So it's no wonder that her switch hits, reverses, all of those are just general cricket shots for her. She's so difficult to set a plan to because she does hit 360. Having that responsibility on her shoulders, once we do have those changes in the Australian side, I think she's going to go from strength to strength.
So a disappointing result for the Australian team. But if we take our green and gold goggles off, Gossie, the final will be home side India taking on South Africa. Indian fans, we know, are fanatical. How good could this be as a spectacle?
Yeah, amazing, because we're going to be crowning a brand new winner for the 50 over World Cup. And for India to do it at home, we've seen the changes that have happened with the women's IPL and the interest from the Indian fans over there. And gee, I'll tell you what, if they can get this done, you know, we've seen the men come about and win trophies, but for the women, this would be phenomenal for them. And then also South Africa, they just annihilated England in the semi-final. So yeah, for them to come about as well, I think it's going to be an absolute spectacle of a performance. And yeah, very excited to see what happens. But it'll just be a touch sad that there's no Australian side there. But you know what? We're all about sharing, aren't we? So happy to share it on one occasion.
And I think South African batters are probably relieved they don't have to face Alana King in that final personally. Michelle Gosgo, it's going to be a really interesting finish to this tournament. Thanks so much for your time.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Marnie Vinyl writes and talks about all things AFLW for the ABC. And Marnie, as we head into the final round of the home and away season, North Melbourne are the only team who are locked in position. They're set to break an AFL-VFL winning streak that was set by Geelong way back in 1950s if they win their 24th game in a row this weekend. But I want to start by talking about the top eight, and let's break it in half. We'll start at the top. The Hawks, the D's and the Lions are seed 2, 3 and 4. So who could move where and how?
Yeah, you're very right. This is, I think, one of the most competitive seasons we've ever got. You've got 12 clubs mathematically in the chance, but starting with the top four, Hawthorn are in second place, but they, unfortunately for them, play North Melbourne on Friday night. So it's likely that they will probably lose that match, which unfortunately means that they will also then face North Melbourne again in the first qualifying final. But putting that aside, so that means that Melbourne that are in third position and Brisbane that are in fourth position, either of those could move up into the top two spot, depending on, you know, other results. Melbourne, they play Geelong, who are gunning for a spot in the top eight, mathematically, very unlikely. And Brisbane play Collingwood, who are lower on the ladder. So that does kind of put Brisbane in a bit of better stead.
From fifth down, we're trying to squeeze six into four, which famously doesn't go. Carlton, the Saints, the Eagles and the Crows hold position, and chasing them is the Swans and Frio. To make this even more interesting, four of those six teams are playing each other this weekend. Can you unpick that puzzle for us?
It's unfortunately one of those weekends where people keep coming to me with mathematical questions. I was like, this is not why I got into sport. Yes. So as you mentioned, there are so many sides that are trying to get in. And Sydney and Fremantle, the ninth and 10th, they're only outside of the eight on percentage. So we're not even just, oh, you win and you're in. You win and you're in, but by a certain amount. Because even if you just start on Friday night, you've got West Coast are playing Carlton. Those are two teams that are, they need to win to finish in the top eight. You've got Sydney that are playing Essendon. Essendon, dead rubber for them. Enjoy your Mad Monday. But Sydney need to win by quite a lot to make sure that they can play finals. You've got St Kilda playing the Bulldogs. St Kilda looking for their maiden finals run. West Coast, it will also be their first finals ever in the AFLW. And then really exciting, Adelaide play Fremantle, and the Adelaide Crows are the most successful side in AFLW history. They have three premierships. They're playing Frio, who are 10th, and they're gunning for a spot within the top eight. So I think that there's going to be a lot of nervous fans watching that particular matchup. But all in all, it's one of those weekends where everyone's just going to be on the live ladder, just constantly checking where their team are, how the other results are going. I'm very excited.
So an exciting final round on the cards, a big final series still to come. How does this sort of competitiveness this late in the season make you reflect on the season to date?
There's a lot of conversation that this season is particularly, there's a boring lens to it because North Melbourne are unbeatable and no one can get near them. And the season is already theoretically sewn up, which I don't agree with. I think that they still can be challenged. I would love to see, I think Brisbane could get close to them if they make it to the grand final with North Melbourne. But if you take North Melbourne out of the equation, this is, I think, the most competitive AFLW season that we have had to date. Even in some of those matchups where you have some of the top four sides playing some of the lower ladder teams, it's not necessarily that the top sides are going to win those, because we're seeing upsets all over the place. The fact that there is 12 teams mathematically in the running to play finals is just, it's so exciting for where the AFLW is at, because historically you've had North Melbourne, Melbourne, Brisbane and Adelaide as the top four sides, and they're the big four of the competition. Where now, I mean, Adelaide might not even play finals. You've got Hawthorn in second spot, Carlton, who have historically over the past few years finished lower on the ladder. They're in fifth position. St Kilda and West Coast are looking to play their maiden AFLW finals. As a fan of AFLW, I think this is a really exciting time, even with North at the top, seemingly untouchable.
Big weekend of footy, big final series to come. Marnie Vinyl, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Poppy.
Sean Maloney calls rugby union for Stan Sport, and Sean, the Wallabies are off on their spring tour after a win against Eddie Jones and the Brave Blossoms in Japan. First up is England at Twickenham, and the Australian team have made a not insignificant number of changes. That number is 8. Interestingly, some of those changes or players that aren't included in this squad are kind of on a technicality. So can you explain to me why players like Will Skelton and Len Ikitau will be missing from this match?
Okay, this is an excellent question, and the answer's not going to make a whole lot of sense, unfortunately, Pop, for you or for our listeners. But what World Rugby have done is set up this little window at this time of year, and again in July as well, where club sides have to release their players for international duty. So generally, it's about a three-week period. That's normally how it looks. Unfortunately, for Wallabies fans, it doesn't start till the week following. So we will be denied the chance to see Len Ikitau, Tom Hooper, Will Skelton, might be one or two others as well, playing for the Wallabies this week. England, conversely, have paid their clubs to have those players released. So they will be at full strength. So it doesn't sound entirely fair. That's sort of it in a nutshell.
That's a really interesting wrinkle that England are able to have a full strength side going into this weekend. And I did note that Joe Schmidt was pretty nonplussed about it. He seemed to think that, you know, these are the rules and we'll all play by them, except for England. He did rest a number of players against Japan last weekend. So as I said, we're seeing 8 changes made to the starting 15 to face England. And we're talking about big names. These are good changes, Sean. Joseph Okusosualii, Max Jorgensen, Fraser McWright. Who is, for you, the most important inclusion coming back into this side?
Oh, that's a tough because they all bring a little bit of their own magic, don't they? But I think the first name you mentioned there, Joseph Okusosualii, you can have a huge impact on this game in the same idea in the corresponding game last year, which I think what might have been his Wallabies debut, I'm pretty sure. Wallabies v Twickenham last year when we had that famous victory. Max Jorgensen scoring late, really late, well after full time.
Max Jorgensen! No, he didn't! Oh my goodness me! Oh, it's unbelievable!
So he's probably going to dominate all the headlines, and so he should because he's playing such great footy at the moment.
The other one is Harry Wilson, the skipper, comes back in. How important will he be just from a leadership perspective? I know the Wallabies have thrown that captaincy role around a little bit in the last sort of 12 or 18 months, but he seems to be the guy that they've settled on to be sort of that full-time skipper. How important will he be coming back?
What massive. I mean, he's been awesome this year for that side. He just puts them on his back and carries them around the field. So he's big. Fraser McWright goes in as well, which is another really handy in for the Wallabies. So this is a strong team, Poppy. Like, if you're getting up at 2 a.m. and watching on Stan Sport, you are in for a really decent morning's watching.
So this begins the spring tour for the Wallabies, where they also take on Italy, Ireland and France. Last year's spring tour filled Australian fans with hope. Wins against England and Wales and a narrow defeat to Ireland. So what are the expectations for the Wallabies in this tour?
Oh, okay. So we've got England, then we've got England, Italy. So let's mark Italy as a win. It'll be a tough win, but let's mark Italy as a win. I think that we can get one over Ireland. I really do. We should have won last year. I mean, the Wallabies copped some really rough refereeing decisions in that game. So I think we can beat Ireland. Definitely think we can beat England. France will be an interesting one because they'll be on tired legs. The last game of the long, long year. Probably this is the longest year for Wallabies in recent memory in terms of test matches. So who knows how that one goes, but let's start with a win at Twickenham.
So you're looking at 3 out of 4 from the spring tour by my count, which sets the expectations pretty high for Wallabies fans, which can be a dangerous thing sometimes in Australian rugby. Sean Maloney, we're kicking off a big spring tour for the Wallabies. Thanks so much for your time and enjoy the rugby.
I will see you at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning and enjoy Oasis next Tuesday.
No time for sound bites this week, just too much sport to talk about. I'm Poppy Penny and this is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Jason Ford. thanks to Prime Video and Stan Sport for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.